So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
How do you feel about a draft for women? We'll be discussing that, a recent vote on a draft for women, and whether or not it will happen, and what we have to say about this. Also, today on the show, we'll be diving into a senator's plea for Roe v. Wade to be overturned and sent back to the individual states. Could this happen with the hearing of the upcoming Supreme Court case this fall, with the decision being handed down next June? Well, we'll stay tuned, but I'm keeping you updated on the case, so stay tuned as I share a little bit more. Also, Simone Biles pulled out of the Olympics, a gymnast, over the last 24 hours, and she pulled out having to do with her mental health. She didn't land one of her movements that well. I'll tell you which one. And next thing you know, she quits in the middle. Did she quit? Was it the best decision for her? We're going to discuss that and more. Joining me today on Trending will be Sister Tina Alfieri. And if you don't know Sister Tina, she is a addiction recovery coach, a therapist, a hermit, a spiritual director, and much more, always giving us candid and blunt feedback on some of the challenging things going against men, women, families today. If you'd like to call and ask Sister Tina, therapist, a question, especially specializing in addictive disorders, give us a call. The number's 1-888-914-9149. Okay, I want to talk for just a minute about gymnastics and the fact that the clothing choices of some of the German gymnasts are actually setting, I think, a new precedence potentially for female sports, female athletics. This is actually a really big deal. In the United States, we have seen over and over again the challenge surrounding everything from dance costumes to athletics, and the pressure for women to wear certain types of clothing. People have asked me over and over again, if you don't know this, I grew up dancing. I even danced with a Russian ballet company, the Kirov, in a summer program, and have had years of dancing training experience at a professional level, and have even taught. And people now ask me today, will you put your daughter in dance classes? And it breaks my heart to say this, but I also know it's probably going to be the most responsible thing. Most likely not. Why? Well, it actually has to do, A, with clothing, but B, with this pressure on young women today to be perpetually hot and available. As we see in dance and as became the norm as I was exiting my dancing years. And I think this is pretty significant when it comes to the Olympics as well. You see, it's been unitards for the German Olympic gymnasts. As a whole team, they decided together that they were going to wear unitards, full body unitards. Now, when I say this, because I was one of those people who don't give me an ugly unitard as a dance costume. I like the pretty, elegant dance costumes, ideally. Actually, good Lord, Mom is not allowed to unbury this. I mean it when I say this. There was one dance. Oh, gosh, it was the worst ever. The costume, that is. We were in full body unitards. Okay, a unitard, if you don't know, is something that, like, is one giant piece covering your entire body. And this one-piece unitard literally covered your feet, each and every single toe, and all the way through the head, so that all that was open was like this little itty-bitty circle smushing your face together so that your eyebrows to your lips could barely be seen. And this was, of course, modern dance. And from there, they then decided that, well, we want to kind of like give some hair to this. So we took giant long pieces of tulle, and they were coming out of the tops of our head. We slit holes in this unitard. And did I mention? Oh, Lord, help us. It was orange. It was like neon orange. Now, other people, at least they got black. I got neon orange. This is like the Power Rangers gone really, really bad. So when I say unitard, this was not the type of unitard that the Olympic athletes were wearing. They were wearing much better, prettier looking unitards. Their trainers here had some sense along with them. But normally, a woman in these types of competitions for gymnasts would be basically wearing bikini bottoms, very high cut bikini bottoms. And as a team, the Germans have decided twice now to not go with the typical outfits. Why? Well, they're actually pushing against the sexualization in gymnastics, but sports across the board. One Olympic gymnast said, specifically Sarah Voss, that this is something they decided to do in April as well at the European Gymnastics Championship. And she emphasized a few reasons why they did this. Number one, to push back against the sexualization in gymnastics. And two, it's outright uncomfortable. I thought that this was a very candid response because the truth of the matter is that certain types of clothing for fitness, dance, are uncomfortable. Especially for women. In particular for women. To keep everything in the right place and to support you throughout the entire month and all the changes your body goes through. And so here, this team decided that it was better to set a precedence of not being sexualized as a team, but also acknowledging that it's helpful when everything's going to stay in one place and you're not worried about your costume and attire when it comes to competing at such a high level, the top level, as Olympic athletes. You know, this provides an opportunity to have a conversation for a minute about modesty. Now, we should also recognize where Sarah Voss, a gymnast from Germany, was also coming from. This is the first time that gymnasts are performing, competing in the Olympics since former USA Gymnastics doctor, the national team doctor, Larry Nassar, was actually sentenced to prison for sexually abusing, let me repeat, hundreds upon hundreds of athletes. Now, Olympians in the trial themselves, multiple of them, commented on how sports culture has really pressured and led to the abuse and objectification of women in particular. And so here we see Sarah Voss and the other German athletes say no. You see, this is really interesting, and I've been thinking about this from the perspective, especially, of women, pressure, modesty, but also supply and demand. Number one, women are expected to meet a certain type of category when it comes to athletics and dance. They're expected to essentially perform. Now, I'm all about performance, giving your gifts and talents to others. But there's a problem when women are reduced to what their body looks like. When they're pressured to perform in certain types of costumes, that leaves them with anxiety about whether or not everything's going to stay in their outfits. Okay, the reality is I've seen some really bad costume moments, costumes gone wrong in the dancer world. And it really makes you ponder, are what we are expecting women to wear in terms of clothing, does it really make sense? Does it make a woman feel confident, poised, proud, beautiful? Or is it making a woman feel pressured, scrutinized, criticized, and outright uncomfortable in terms of her performance? I think a lot of us as women, whether it has to do with athletic performance and what we wear, or even, and I think this is important, even what we wear day to day, a lot of us do feel pressured, scrutinized, criticized, and outright uncomfortable in the clothes that we're wearing. And I think Sarah Voss and the German Olympians really opened the door. Will they set a trend? Perhaps. But you know what I think they will do? They'll spark conversations, individual conversations between people like you and I who say, maybe we need to rethink clothing. Now, one of the things I was reading, it was a fascinating piece. It was commenting on how these German athletes chose unitards. And it was some of the creators of various gymnastic outfits. And they're commenting saying, yeah, we're glad to make unitards. But the reality is that not a lot of people request unitards. Most of them request the stereotypical outfits with not a lot covering anything for women in terms of their performance for gymnastics. And so they said, if there's a demand, we will supply them. This made me think overall today about the challenge surrounding modesty. So many women are frustrated, and this was me in high school, because it's hard to find clothing. Don't go to the junior section. Don't go to any teenage section, because the reality is the standards for clothing won't be very high in terms of the quantity that's available. And so I think that it's important that we remember supply and demand, that we don't settle for buying clothes that don't meet our expectations of beauty, comfort, modesty. You see, this is very important for women today. The Catholic Church actually has a lot to say about modesty, but not necessarily entirely in the way you think. So often we reduce modesty just the way we dress. And that is a huge part of it, but it's also the way we stand, the way we talk, our speech. You see, modesty has to do, as the Catechism of the Catholic Church discusses, about the integral part of temperance. It has to do with this integral part of temperance. It's fundamental to having temperance, a sense of tempering what we do, self-control, moderation. All of this settles within temperance. But it also discusses how modesty has to do with the center of the human person, at the core, who we are, what message we're trying to communicate about ourselves. And so this is very important for us to ponder, that modesty has to do with the center of the person, with the center of who I am. And so a few really easy, I think, simple guidelines for working on how we dress as women and maybe how your daughters dress could really touch on, number one, comfort. You shouldn't feel like you have to fix or tuck clothing in all the time. Now, this could also have to do with wearing A, the right size, but B, clothing that doesn't make you feel uncomfortable or kind of nitpicking at yourself. Two, we need to dress to the occasion, appropriate wear for appropriate people and locations. And third, remember that it's not just what we are, but it's a matter of who we are. Who do we want to say we are? Do we want to say that we're a piece of meat available for anyone to look at? Or do we want to say that I'm a person worthy of respect, that I value myself as well as others? You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Joining me, and actually to dive more into the Olympics, is Sister Tina Alfieri. She is a recovery coach, addiction specialist, having to do with sexual addictions as well. She's a therapist, a hermited nun, and a spiritual director. Sister Tina Alfieri, welcome to Trending.
Thank you, Timory. Good evening. I'm glad to be with you.
If anyone has a question for Sister Tina, you can give us a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We're also taking questions on Instagram as well. You can go ahead and comment on my Instagram story. We put a question box up. Find me and follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. So one of the athletes, specifically a gymnast, Simone Biles, has pulled out in the middle of competing after struggling to land the vault. Sister Tina, it's fascinating when I read some of the stories about this. There's a lot of criticism and a lot of justification for Simone having pulled out of competing and leaving the rest of the team to compete. She said everything from the fact that she didn't want to second guess herself, that she was still struggling with something, and referring to basically a high stress situation where she was basically freaking out. She said that she's on medicine, receiving therapy, and so it sparked this conversation surrounding mental health. What are your initial thoughts upon hearing about Simone's response to just outright leaving the Olympic competitions?
I have nothing but support for all of these elite athletes, and it's not just in gymnastics, it's lots of other elite athletic competitions. Oh, goodness, I just cannot imagine the pressure that this young woman is under. And I think a lot of it is media-driven, putting the spotlight on her. Sometimes athletes also put the spotlight on themselves. There's a lot of influential media that helps to tell or spin a story. And I have nothing but respect for Ms. Biles or any other elite athlete who feels that they need to take a time out or step away due to this stress. When we think about it, I believe Ms. Biles is 24. She's had an entire life devoted to this one activity. Most of us, when we're 24, we're either in college or graduating from college, still trying to figure out what we want to do with the rest of our life. For elite athletes, possibly professional dancers, etc., hearing earlier, they have to make this decision about what they want to do with the rest of their lives at a professional level at a very early age, 12 or 13. When we think about the development of the brain, the maturation levels emotionally, that's a huge commitment. And I have nothing but respect for people who make that commitment, the families that support them in doing this, but I don't think any of us, except maybe other elite athletes, can really commiserate and understand what it's like to make this life choice at age 12 or 13 for the next 10 or 12 years, that this is going to be your one focus, your life. It's the end-all, be-all. It is a lot of pressure.
Right. You know, Sister Tina, it's interesting. If you're just joining us, that's Sister Tina Alfieri. She's a therapist, addiction recovery coach. And I keep looking at this and I see two perspectives. Because at first, my reaction, my gut reaction is, I don't get it. Suck it up, buttercup. Perform. You're at the Olympics. That was my initial response. And I kind of had to pull back and really think about it and think about where a lot of millennials and Gen Z are, because you would technically, I think, be Gen Z. And there's this trend among young people today, especially kind of that Gen Z, that, you know, if I'm not going to be the best, I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to completely quit, completely pull out. And that could be part of her mindset. And then, you know, we tend to use mental health as the excuse perhaps as to why that they would just pull out. But then I think on the other side of it, Sister Tina, you touch on something really important to ponder. There's a lot of pressure on young people today. And we've seen this with an overwhelming amount of stress among teenagers and college students to perform, to engage in all the extracurricular activities, to already be on the way to college prep by the time they're in sixth grade, basically. And it's a lot. And I almost wonder if Simone potentially, like you said, after kind of making a decision as a very young girl that this was the way she was going to travel in toward the Olympics, if at a certain point she said, I'm done. I'm done with the pressure, because she did say, I wanted it to be for myself. She even commented saying she felt like it was for others. And she said that it hurt that it was for other people. And it really made me ponder, you know, where do you find the balance of giving yourself as a gift and just doing something to please people?
And that's a really, really difficult decision. I think especially kind of going back to the Olympics and back to the current generation of millennials or Gen Z, you know, the Olympics back in the 1920s, 1930s, there was no mass media. They were not televised around the world. You had to wait until maybe the newspaper report came out the next day or two before you found out how people were doing, or if they fell off the balance beam, or if they dropped the baton in the in the 4x4 relay. So there wasn't that news, instantaneous traveling of bad news quickly, number one.
Interesting.
And number two, we didn't have millions of eyes watching and knowing that you're being watched by millions of people. If you were in a large stadium back in the 1920s or 30s during the Olympics, that's really the people that were watching you. And I think that's a different perception than magnifying that and multiplying that times 10 or multiplying it times 100, knowing that there's millions of people around the world instantaneously seeing you. If you have an error, a mistake, I talk about being in a fishbowl or under the microscope. It's intense. I thank God that I don't have anybody looking at me that closely when I make my mistakes.
Right. You know, Sister Tina, you bring up a really good point. Social pressure has completely changed because it's everyone watching on TV, everyone watching on replay that evening, all of the scrutiny that she receives via social media throughout the day. I was even just following some of the Olympic athletes over the last couple of days, and the pressure to kind of give updates when they feel as if perhaps they might have failed and they didn't win. Or I think that the pressure is so high versus there's this moment of savoring. I'm an Olympic athlete. praise the Lord. What a gift. What an opportunity to give myself in this performance. But isn't it interesting? You know, I was asked the question about, you know, what's the balance between giving yourself as a gift and then kind of being reduced and kind of just focusing on pleasing others. You know, I hadn't thought about the fact that we are performing today when you're in the Olympics for such a high quantity of people that it's one thing to give yourself standing in an auditorium like it used to be and those people who were there saw you, but now you're giving yourself to millions of people at once, and I guess we don't ever really ponder the increase in pressure that that in and of itself provides for women today. And not just Olympic athletes, but any athlete or even a young woman who has a phone and is posting on social media to friends, strangers, broadcasting to everyone she's gone to school with, and so on from there in her network.
And you bring up a really good point. Once something is out there on social media, you usually cannot retract it. And so it's going to get played over and over and over again. God bless all of these elite athletes or professional athletes who are out there doing their best. They are human beings. I think we need to really remember that. And for some of them, there's huge financial compensation attached to this. How would you like maybe the only event of note in your life, depending on you being successful at it, in order for you to make a livelihood for the rest of your life or for your family, this one day, this one event? There's a lot of endorsement deals related to winning medals at the Olympics or being a professional or elite athlete. So there's a lot more to this than just the performance of how that one day, one time goes. And trust me, this is not lost on these professional athletes. They know, and they've known for years because they see it happening to others ahead of them. People going on to get endorsement deals, commercials, advertising, and then they see people who falter along the way, other athletes who falter along the way and are kind of left to the wayside. Mm-hmm. So this is extremely stressful. I think that most of us feel, well, if my current job doesn't work out, I can always go get something else. When
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. That's Sister Tina Alfieri. And we're going to come back diving into dealing with high-stress situations, taking your questions here as well. We'll discuss the role of therapy and medication dealing with stress and anxiety and the importance of who you are as a person rather than what you do for a living. Give us a call if you have a question. The number's 1-888-914-9149. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Are you watching the Olympics? If so, what sports? You know, how do you watch the Olympics? I mean, this is the one reason to actually have cable, satellite, whatever. Millennials don't have cable or satellite. They only do streaming. So how are you watching the Olympics? I'd love to hear from you. Reach out on social media. What's been your favorite sport so far? Go ahead and give us a call, number 1-888-914-9149. If you have a question, my guest today is Sister Tina Alfieri. She's a sex addiction recovery coach. She's a therapist. She's also a hermited nun from Florida. Sister Tina, we've been discussing Simone Biles, who pulled out in the middle of competing after struggling to land the vault, that is, in gymnastics competitions. And essentially, it's brought up a lot of questions about quitting versus quitting for just reasons surrounding taking care of yourself, the pressure that we're under. If you're just joining us, it's a great conversation about pressure that young men and women face today. But I want to turn the perspective for just a moment and discuss the importance of who we are as a person versus what we do for a living and how this could be at the heart of her struggle right now.
It's a very good point you bring up, Timory. Thank you. Who we are as people, especially Catholic Christians, we are children of God, and we have to remember that that is the most important thing, and that gives us our sense of being, our groundedness in God. This is where I get my fulfillment. If I happen to also have various skills, talents, or abilities, then that's great. But if I lose those skills, talents, or abilities, or I outgrow them, the physical demands of gymnastics or football, professional elite sports, then I have to be something more than just the job that I had or that special skill or talent. And I think this is where professional athletes really, there is much more emphasis being given to this today about what are you going to do after your career is over. And it's very difficult to think of someone as Ms. Biles being 24 and probably her career is over, not because of her removing herself from the competition, but she's 24. That's really at the, close to the top end of right. one's gymnastics professional career. And the same thing goes with football players, tennis players. There's going to be an end for this specialized skill, talent, or ability that you have. And then who are you once that is out of your life? This, there has to be more to you as a person. You are not what you do. You are who you are. And as Christians, we understand we get our meaning and our relationship of who we are through Jesus Christ. We're children of God. We have a purpose. And that purpose is to love Him, worship Him, and to bring others to God. So there's more than just having a unique skill, talent, or ability as an athlete. We have to find our center, our grounding in Christ.
And isn't it interesting that so often I think people who are in the public eye, whether it's a young person who's on social media and wants the attention, or a influencer or a celebrity, that basically there's this desire for all this love and attention from everyone. But at the end of the day, what they're looking for and they need, whether or not they have incredible Olympic talent, whether they go to the Olympics or whether they receive all of the desired attention and number of likes, is this unconditional love that only God the Father can give perfectly. And, you know, this is where we see in the Christian perspective, the Christian worldview, this intrinsic and inherent value and love from God for who we are and understanding of our value as a human person. I think this is such an important perspective to have when we're talking about who we are versus reducing ourselves to what we do. I want to shift gears for just a moment because Simone's story, if you're just listening to us, Simone Biles, a gymnast, pulled out of the competition in the middle after struggling to land the vault. And it makes me ask the question as well, do young people think it's okay to just give up today?
As far as I'm not so sure about giving up. I don't think Ms. Biles was giving up. I think young adults, we have to practice, and that's what the teenage years are for, socializing, practicing our skills, developing our social relatedness, and finding that ability to persevere despite negative consequences or hardships. Again, I think when we're talking about Ms. Biles, she's on a totally different level. This is someone who's been very determined and has a lot of perseverance to get where she is. I think it's different if we have a child, maybe who's 12, 13, 14, and absolutely refuses to try to go out for any kind of team sport or maybe any kind of individual skill or activity, whether it's karate or playing the violin or the piano because they're afraid of failing, or they might take a few lessons and then they get very fearful that I'm not going to be able to be good at this, so I'm just going to quit and give up. That's actually more about perfectionism, and none of us are perfect, and coming to grips with our humanity and helping children understand that we're not going to be all Simone Biles athletes, but we can have some talent, skills, and abilities, and we can be comfortable with them, and also being comfortable with not being perfect. And I to me, that's also speaks about the virtue of humility, being comfortable with not being perfect.
You know, it's a great example because this is a future of, okay, will I apply for the job and throw my hat in and try? Or will I remove myself from ever jumping in because I don't think I can do it and we have all this self-doubt? But what you're talking about is this idea of perfectionism. We have to find that balance between humility and pride, being proud of ourselves. You know, it brings, I think, a lot of questions to mind. One thing that also stands out to me about Simone Biles pulling out after struggling to land the vault, which is something she is routine for her. It isn't it is a challenge, but it isn't challenged in the same way. And she's very talented at landing the vault. And it was making me think as well, from the perspective of an athlete coming at this from the perspective of a dancer, you know, there is a certain circumstance where, you know, I should not go and take a class right now. I shouldn't be performing because I am not in the right mental space. And that could lead me to being injured. It could put me in a dangerous position. And so a lot of people were asking Simone, were you injured? Is this why you pulled out? And she said, no, I'm not injured. But she was trying to explain, like, this could be part of the reason why I did not perform. It was one piece of it, that if the mental space wasn't there and correct, it could put her in a dangerous circumstance where she could get injured. So I think it provides a lot of opportunity for conversation and pondering, but more so looking into our own hearts of what sort of expectations, pressures do we put on ourselves and others. You know, do I have this quitting mentality? Do I have perseverance? Am I doing things for the right reasons? Or even do I reduce myself to what I do every day? Or do I see the inherent value of who I am? You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Sister Tina Alfieri is with me. She's an addiction coach, a specialist in therapy, spiritual direction, and much more. We have some questions coming in. One question from JT Twin: how do you know when to help and when not to help someone?
Wow, that's a big open-ended question. There's probably too many variables going on in that person's life.
Let's say it's an addiction here, maybe.
An addiction, okay. So I always suggest to friends or family, do whatever you can do to support the person's recovery attempts. But don't do anything that's going to encourage or prolong their active addiction. For example, if you can help your loved one who maybe has an addiction, if you can drive them to an AA or an NA meeting, please do so. If that's the only way they can get there, if they don't have a way, if they've lost their driver's license due to a DUI, if you can help them get to a meeting, please do. But if your loved one who may have an addiction says, hey, can you loan me $20? I would say absolutely not. We have no idea, or we probably have a pretty good idea of where that $20 is going to go. So kind of general rule of thumb, as a family or friend of someone who may have an addiction problem, do anything you can that supports the recovery, but don't do anything that is going to encourage or prolong the active addiction.
We have another question coming in. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Haley Moss on Instagram asks, what would you suggest for those who work in ministry feeling spiritually burnt out? And I'll just add to the question, also those who are raising a family, which is a ministry in and of themselves, who are also feeling spiritually burnt out.
Fantastic question. We all need time away because we all get burned out. Again, we're human. We are not robots or machines. We are not perfect. We can't expect ourselves to be perfect. God rested after creating the world on the Sabbath. Jesus went away often alone to pray. We also can use those as examples for ourselves. It is okay to take time for yourself. Maybe put the kids with grandma or grandpa or uncle or auntie for the weekend and go away for a weekend just to have some alone time, some quiet time. It is okay to take a couple of days off from work to recharge and renew. There's nothing wrong with this. This is an example that's given to us in scripture. In the Old Testament, they talk about having the where you till the field for 7 years and then you let it go fallow to rest before you try to till it and plant it again. Everything needs rest and recovery and recuperation and relaxation. We are no different. It's,
you know,
not
just a thought. If dirt needs rest, so do we, right? I mean, it's a simple concept that we don't even think about.
And that reminds me of Genesis. You know, we come from dirt, to dirt we shall return. So if dirt gets to rest, don't we deserve a rest?
It makes you
bring
humble.
Up a perfect point. Yes.
And by the way, humility has to do with, if you break down the word, it has to do with being of the earth, of the ground. Mm. And so even to just kind of put that in our mind for a moment, I think that mm-hmm. this perspective you're giving on how to recover spiritually, we don't take rest. We don't mm-hmm. take breaks. We don't pull away. And we think that when we are pulling away, it's watching, binge watching a new series on Amazon mm-hmm. Prime, or we think mm-hmm. it's, you know, recovering by catching up on the last 100 text messages or emails that I have to respond to. When in reality, we are failing to have a rest. We're just always catching up. And so how do you shut things off when it's almost as if you have an addiction to catching up with everything when you do have a so-called down moment?
Yeah. So I think it's important to have a day of rest or even an hour or two of rest at least once a week, an electronic digital unplugging for an hour or two. Turn off the computer, turn off the flat screen TV, turn off your cell phones, turn off the Xbox, the Wii, or whatever else is going on. Just turn it off and have nothing but peace and quiet. That's parents and children. We need a Sabbath again. It's okay to take a disconnect for an hour or two once a week. Or for adults, the idea of a retreat, a 2 or 3 day spiritual retreat to just be away and alone with God. Is just a wonderful way to recharge. I know many of us talk about going on vacation, but vacations sometimes, depending on what you do, are not relaxing. We're running, we're rushing, we're trying to catch the plane, the train. Traffic is horrible. When we get to our destination, we want to go, 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 do, and see everything and partake. And sometimes we come back from our vacation more exhausted. We have to learn how to really unplug, detach, and slow down. And a spiritual retreat for 2 or 3 days is a great way to do that.
I was on the road for 10 days. I was in California, and I took a day off for my first day of work back, even though I got back on a Sunday. It's just too much sometimes to try to do mm-hmm. everything, to play catch up, to expect to unpack. And you know, you leave all of your interpersonal relationships parched if you do so, from my daughter to my husband. And so it was great. I'm glad I did it. I should have taken 2 or 3 days off mm-hmm. to recover from being out of town. And so these are incredible tips for helping us recover spiritually, take care of our souls, find balance in terms of our mental health. That's been Sister Tina Alfieri here with us on Trending. You can find her. She actually works. You can find her bloomforcatholicwomen.com. Again, bloomforcatholicwomen.com. She especially works with women who have been betrayed due to sexual addiction. So be sure to check that out. We'll post a link on social media. And I want to take this question actually coming in. Philip from Salt Lake City said his daughter was a gymnast and wanted to share a little bit about when she retired. Philip, welcome to Trending.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, great. What's your comment?
My daughter, my comment is, I think women's gymnastics is a misnomer. It's girls' gymnastics. The women, the competitors, average age of the competitors of the female gymnast is about 10 years younger than probably the average age of track and field competitors. It's not quite as bad as it used to be, but these are really young kids. And my daughter retired at the age of 13, and she had beaten Shannon Miller on the beam. So, I mean, she beat Olympic gold medalists. And at 13, she decided she wanted to be a kid and not.
Wow.
It was the point where you either have to go for the Olympic kind of stuff or quit, because if you stay where you are, you get injured. And the pressure that's on these girls is just tremendous.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's fascinating. So she was 13 years old when she stopped competing in gymnastics, women's gymnastics. And I think that this is a really good example, because she was able to determine at that age she wanted to be done. But you know, there are certain, I think, Olympic athletes where you make it so far and you're so close. Maybe you view, okay, the Olympics are 2 years away, or the Olympics are 6 months away. I remember one Olympic athlete, I think she was a tennis player. Her name is evading me right now. She was Olympic bound, and she ended up getting pregnant and had a baby. And so she said, okay, not this year. And I don't know. I need to follow up and see if she ever ended up making it to the Olympics or not. But this is, I think, a great example where we have to find that balance of what's good for my mind, what's good for my body, what's good for my soul. And are we empowering women to be able to make that distinction? Or are women perpetually under this influential culture to perform? I think this is the question of the hour. And if you're just joining us, we've really dug into Simone Biles' story of pulling out of the Olympics in the middle of the competition after struggling to land the vault. I think there are a lot of perspectives here, but much to be learned. I'll be back here on Trending, and I'm going to discuss a draft for women and some good news surrounding the Supreme Court case addressing Roe versus Wade. Don't go away.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, what do you think? What do you think about a draft for women? It's okay to agree one way or the other. I am not okay with a draft for women. Why? Because men and women are different. That's the number one reason. Men and women are different. And men are called to protect women. That has been historically, universally, worldwide for centuries upon centuries. Going back into ancient civilizations, that what do? Men protect the women and children. What does the Catholic Church teach? Women are the heart of the home. Husbands are the head of the home. That men have the chief place in leading, protecting, and providing, and that women have the chief place in loving. Now, that doesn't mean that, sure, a woman can't fight in combat. We're talking about whether or not women should be forced to, and we could even say, and I'll touch on it in just a minute, whether or not men and women should fight side by side. All of these are important things to discuss. If you haven't heard, it's not received a lot of attention, and we'll see what ends up happening. But we're looking at the National Defense Authorization Act. There have been a number of side committees that have voted, and the Armed Services Committee voted in a vote 23-3 to require women to register for the draft. Now, many are saying before the bill passes its final stage that this requirement for a draft for women will be removed. They will not let it stand. But it yet again brings up, like we've seen every year or two, the debate over a draft for women. One very loud voice who I've appreciated listening to on this is actually a fellow Catholic, Matt Walsh. Regardless of what you think about his politics, he said one thing that was very, very firmly said. He said, by the way, I'd go to prison before I'd register my daughter for the draft. Maybe you yourself feel that way. Some people have criticized him, saying that he's sexist for not being in favor of a draft and going so far as to say that he'd go to prison before his daughter was signed up for a draft. You see, a draft is essentially, if done so, would force women to enter into service. Force them if a draft occurred. Likelihood of having another draft? I don't know. Things can be pretty tense with China at moments. Who knows what the future will hold? The last draft was really only two generations away from me and my generation. Who knows what will happen in the future? You see, it's interesting because some people comment, why is it that we can be proud of our sons if drafted, but object to women entering into a draft? Many people are saying this is sexist. Well, I'm sorry, but I always find it funny, the idea of the phrase sexist, because to say that someone's sexist is to actually acknowledge to begin with that there are differences between a man and a woman, aka sex, right? I mean, biological, physiological, intellectual differences on the level of the brain. You think I'm being rude by saying there are differences on the level of brain? Neuroscientists are well known for being referred to as neurosexists. Why? Because they even recognize the difference of medications. Even something as simple as a sleeping medication doesn't matter necessarily based on weight or height, but it had to do with a response on the level of the brain to certain sleeping medications, so showing differences between men and women. There's sex differences written into every single fiber of our bodies, and it's so important that we recognize this. You see, the problem is that people are offended by the idea of men being leaders, protectors, and providers. And I think that's because we live in a culture where people actually do believe that chivalry is dead. That men going to fight wars to protect women has gone out the door. But I think that this stems from multiple generations now of wounds surrounding what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, how to have your femininity protected by the strength of a man and his masculinity. You see, there's a great difference between men and women. There's a huge difference between voluntary service and drafts. And I do actually, and I've said this before, and in fact, let's go ahead and post the link to the topic in the show today. I discussed women in combat because I don't really agree with women being side by side with men in combat. It gets in the way of men's instincts. They have to ride off their natural instinct to protect the woman at their side, rather than focusing on the mission as they ought. And I don't think rewiring our brains and our natural instincts to not protect, for men to not protect the woman side by side with him, is a good thing. I think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a terrible thing. And you go talk to any high school or even most college-age boys, and if they're not afraid of what everyone will think about what they have to say, they agree. I know because I was just with a wonderful group of young men this week, and one of the conversations we've had before is really the topic of women in combat, side by side with men. You see, we have to emphasize over and over again that women are the heart. Women are the child bearers. And I know this may sound so-called sexist to people, but there was a reason for centuries upon centuries that the men went away to war and the women stayed back and cared for the children. Not just to provide that heart, that love, that hope for the family, but also because women are child bearers. They can have children. And it is simple. Yes, to help move forward the human race, but not just to move forward the human race and look at women as baby-making machines, but to see that the gift of human life is so important, so special, so life-changing and life-altering that it matters that we preserve those who can carry and nourish new human beings. St. Edith Stein, known as St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross, who lived during World War II and died in Auschwitz, she herself has commented about how a woman's soul is a place in which other souls are meant to unfold. That is, the woman herself nourishes and develops the human being. A woman herself has this even greater inclination toward the personal development, not just of herself, but of others. This is why there's something so beautiful and profound in men leading, protecting, and providing, and standing at the forefront, and being the ones, if necessary, called to a draft. And the women, not being people who are less than, but we recognize there's a difference. There's something special about them. Ignore the waves of second wave feminism that says there are no differences between men and women, because the reality is it leads us to dangerous, life-altering, and quite damaging policies and interpersonal relationships. We need to not stand by as people say, well, there's no difference between men and women. They're just the same. So let's just draft them all. No, there's a reason why people have a visceral reaction. I don't think we should be afraid to share our response, of course, with reason and collaboration, and be willing to say other people are wrong. That's okay. Because the reality is there is such a truth and a distinction between femininity and masculinity. Coming up tomorrow here on Trending, we're going to be diving into the topic of what happens in the instance that Roe versus Wade is overturned and a woman finds herself pregnant via incest or rape. This is an important question and one that leads many to advocate for keeping abortion legal. We'll discuss why we should never make that an exception and what the proper response and understanding is for the impact on a woman and a child. But also, news will be coming to you about how senators have pleaded for Roe versus Wade to be overturned and sent back to the individual states. This may be part of what is at stake at the Supreme Court this fall, and we'll hear the briefing coming out this June. So stay tuned. I'll be with you tomorrow here on Trending. God bless, and taking it off with a rosary next.